global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks higher. This update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. S&P up 9 today, 2163, a gain there of 0.5%. Energy shares leading the way higher. Crude oil rallying. West Texas Intermediate crude up 2.8%, now at 51.19. Brent up 2%, 52.97. ExxonMobil up by 2%. The Dow up 88 points, a gain there of 0.5%. NASDAQ up 36, up 0.7%. Gold up 970 the ounce, a gain there of 0.8%. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I read markets. Cut it.
This is your Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Denise Pellegrini. The smart home industry is still in its early stages.
It's about a $7.4 billion equipment market.
Eugene Hull is analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence.
We've heard about the Nest Smart Smoke Detector. There's a network camera segment, which is about $1.2 billion. There's a smart door and a smart lock. That's about a $1 billion market. And smart thermostats, right? And we've heard about the Nest Smart Thermostats, and that's about an $800 million market.
Hull calls it an expensive, hobbyist-intensive industry at this point.
We're talking about at least $1,000 to $2,000 to at least get a basic setup.
Hull also says the hardware is fragmented, with the devices mostly unable to communicate with each other. Still, homebuyers are interested. Coldwell Banker says about a third of Americans say a move-in-ready home is one that already has smart home technology installed. And that's your Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Denise Pellegrini.
Thank you very much, Denise. Bloomberg Markets are brought to you by National Realty, managers of New York City cash flow real estate, providing with a 12% annualized return with immediate monthly dividends. See them at nria.net.
Well, a Northwestern professor awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry last week as his work, along with that of two other scientists, figuring out kind of how to develop the world's tiniest machines. So what does this mean for a university that's on the lookout for emerging technologies and the impact that that has on a lot of critical areas? Henry Beenan is with us. He's president emeritus at Northwestern University at Evanston, Illinois, also with our Janet Lauren, higher education reporter at Bloomberg News. Janet, we wanted to do this because a little while ago, back over the summer, you brought us a story about what Northwestern was doing and the investments it had in a particular drug and what it meant for the university.
Yes, so the drug Lyrica was developed at a chemistry lab at Northwestern, and that eventually became Pfizer's number one drug. And Northwestern, over time, sold the royalties and got a tremendous amount of money. It helped the endowment grow to be the eighth largest in the country. And we had Henry on last time to discuss how Northwestern used that Lyrica money into it, put it all into the endowment. And Henry can talk a little bit today about how the school used the Lyrica funds to endow the International Institute for Nanotechnology, of which Professor Stoddard teaches.
Henry, come on in on the conversation. I mean, why did you do that? How did you know to kind of invest in that area? What kind of drove you?
Well, it was maybe a bit of a gamble. We knew that nanotechnology was going to be important for the future. It had so many applications if it could be pulled off for health, for therapeutic work, for energy, for materials. So it was a very broad area, and the trick was we had a lot of strength already at Northwestern. Chad Merkin, who we also hope will win a Nobel, Sam Stoop, who we hope will win a Nobel, Tom Mead. These were all excellent chemists whose work in nanotechnology is very, very significant. So we thought if we could make additional hires in this field among the very, very best scientists in the world, we could strengthen ourselves. And when we reached out to Fraser Stoddard, who later became Sir Fraser, he was at UCLA at the time, and we brought him to Northwestern with a very large group of his colleagues, graduate students, assistants. It turns out that hire really paid off, as Fraser won the Nobel a few days ago.
And how much money are we talking about to be able to recruit professors of such high caliber that were able to go on and do what they did?
So Fraser and I were joking at a party the other night at Professor Merkin's house, and he said $25 million. I said he had undersold himself a little bit. It was very, very expensive. One of the interesting things is that there was never a discussion with Fraser or other top scientists about salary for themselves. It was always, what will be the size of my lab? How many people can I bring? What kind of equipment will I have? How can you update it in a guaranteed way? And since we did bring this big team that went with Fraser from UCLA, it was a very expensive hire. Plus, we also promised to really make some remodeling in the labs. Professor Silverman, whose drug it was, whose IP it was, had given us a lead gift for a new building, and a big hunk of Fraser's team was to go into that building. So that also benefited us a lot because we used both funds we had and funds that Professor Silverman gave us to invest in chemistry broadly at Northwestern and into nanotechnology specifically. But it was a very large amount of money.
The advancements for humankind will expectedly and hopefully be fantastic, and we shall be grateful for the effort and money spent. But I wonder what the return for the university is. What does the university get out of this besides a great moment of backslapping? And I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong. I know a lot about backslapping.
Well, I think the real answer is what great research universities are supposed to do is to recruit fine students, faculty, to produce knowledge, to disperse knowledge in the world. So the bottom line is, are we doing something, particularly in this area, which is commercializable, which is going to have major effects on life, on quality of life, for example, drug delivery, being able to deliver therapeutics to cancer cells more efficiently and effectively, to really understand the way life works and to be able to improve it. That's one area that we really hope will have an effect. Another is to produce materials which last longer, are more efficient, adapt better to different weather conditions, energy, battery life. All these are areas in which chemistry and nanotechnology may improve life. Now, what's in it for Northwestern? Directly, there is a lot of backslapping, but what we hope is it will also help us recruit the very best people to come to our university. I was talking to a couple of senior chemists at this party I mentioned, and they said if Fraser Stoddard hadn't come, they wouldn't have come later on. So I do think these kinds of recruitments have a great, great effect.
So this week and over the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about endowment returns. I know Northwestern has a later fiscal year than most schools end June 30th. The majority of colleges have reported losses for the fiscal year ended June 30th, with the exception of a few such as Yale and Princeton. What does it mean for schools when they are losing money for a year or so, and especially in this low return environment?
So what you can spend off endowment in your operating budget is usually done with lagged averages, so you're not completely at the whim of a one-year market. You try to average out your highs and your lows, so you can definitely live with a 1 or 2% return, which is negative. You would be very hard put to, and certainly wouldn't want to, live with it over any sustained period of time. One of the ratios you really want to look at, Janet, is what share of your operating budget comes out of endowment? How much of it comes from annual gifts? How much comes from tuition? How much may come from unrelated business income, whatever it may be? Once you get up to 40-45% of your operating budget being spun out from your spending from endowment, you are indeed vulnerable to downturns in the market. There's no question about it.
So going forward in this low return environment, if you have a couple of years of this, especially if you're a place like Princeton or Amherst College or Grinnell that relies on half of their operational budget from the endowment, or even Yale, which is the third, What are the conversations going on in schools now in terms of moving forward? How do you plan, in this low-return environment, especially if it's sustained?
Well, I think if we go back, we can look into the future, but if we go back for a minute to 2007, 2008, when you had a really sharp break in endowments, there were very substantial and immediate cutbacks in order to try to balance budget. Of course, you can try to borrow your way out, but that's got negative consequences over any medium run for a university. Your bond rating may go down. Borrowing may get more expensive for you. Happily, that didn't happen at Northwestern, just like it happens to municipalities and states. We're all prey to the rigors of the bond market.
Right.
So now if we look at the future, if we think what would happen in a really sustained low-return environment, absolutely, universities will have to pull in their horns
right.
and spend less in some areas. There's no doubt about it.
Henry, thank you so much for joining us once again. Really appreciate it. Henry Bienen, President Emeritus at Northwestern University, on the phone in Evanston, along with Janet Lauren, higher education reporter at Bloomberg News. This is Bloomberg Markets. Carol Masser, Corey Johnson. This is Bloomberg.